My name is Webster Tarpley. I'm the author, really, of two books, the unauthorized biography of George Bush, 1992, had some impact on that campaign, and then the 9/11 synthetic terror, 2005, which has reached its third edition, and I'm so happy that the world premiere of the third edition is here in the great American city of Chicago. And of course, coming from an inveterate New Yorker, when I say these things, I hope you're going to be pleased. The second city. The second city. And a wonderful tradition, and in some ways very congenial to our way of thinking. So here is a strategy paper. We're supposed to be here to discuss strategy, and here is one. And it's not just the project of an individual or group of individuals, but I think it's 11 different 9/11 groups, and it includes some of the most active and the most diligent. Certainly, the Seattle 9/11 Visibility Project, people know. 9/11 Truth LA is on board. The Vermont group, the Vermont Green Party. Remember, the Vermont Green Party are the people who say impeach Bush Cheney, for the first article being 9/11 crimes, including misprision of treason. Misprision of treason is the word that needs to go around the world in the wire services.
What is that word?
Misprision is the crime. You have an unbeatable misprision case against Bush. You're a government official. You see that a crime is going to be carried out or is being carried out. If you don't stop it, that's a crime. If you're a federal official.
How do you spell the first word?
M-I-S, it's all one word, M-I-S-P-R-I-S-I-O-N, misprision of treason. Try that out on these radio talk show hosts and TV commentators, and you'll tie them in knots.
Look up U.S. Code Title 18, Section 2382. Section 2382.
And there we're hearing, just so you know who that's coming from, that's a distinguished legal scholar, that's Craig Hill, the head of the Green Party of Vermont, who is not only the theoretician of this, but also the one who obtained, for the first time in the United States, as far as we know, a statewide party, not only saying impeach Bush, which is a pious wish, I would think, but impeach Bush on 9/11 crimes becomes a feasible, doable action that could actually go on in the real world. Now, we've talked about the strategic emergency here. All right, so this united front of groups, with a certain amount of debate, put together a statement which provides an analysis of the situation that we're in today. And it also points to 6 or 8 action points. I would strongly suggest that in one of the plenary sessions that is labeled strategy, that this be thoroughly debated. I understand there are other ideas that have been circulated. There's one about a 9/11 PAC to support candidates, and that sounds like a fine thing. But the question here is, I'll just give you a quick sampling of this. The problem that we face today is that anybody who is at all witting in the world of intelligence realizes that everything you see on the surface of world affairs has to do with the grand question, will there be the atomic bombing, the atomic attack on Iran, yes or no? And how quickly? And in what form, with what auxiliaries, and so forth? This is not new in itself. About a year ago, Philip Giraldi wrote a famous article in the American Conservative pointing to something that was practically the Cheney Doctrine at that time. The Cheney Doctrine saying, you've got to be ready for the atomic bombing of Iran in the wake of a new 9/11, which would furnish the pretext that there would be no attempt to prove the guilt of Iran. It would simply be asserted, as in the case of Iraq, and the bombing would begin. This has now been formalized. We have, as of last August, according to my calculations, we have global strike. We have a stance or posture of the US military, which is practically the Tojo Doctrine. It is nuclear sneak attack as the basic approach to hostilities. Everything seems to be in place for this attack. We've had the visit of Israeli Prime Minister Olmert to Washington. He got to address a joint session of the Congress. Then we had Tony Blair cavorting with Bush in the press room. Those two visits, I take it, are to finalize the war planning for the attack on Iran. So that part of it is all there.
Webster, he just went to the Vatican. Every time they go to the Vatican, it's a kiss of death, there's another attack. He's there right now.
I would not want to follow that too far. I'll find that that will not hold up in the way that the Anglo-American meetings do, because I think this is not... You seem to think these are strictly comparable, and I would have to say, I don't think they're strictly comparable. Okay? It's a horse of a different color. Huh? Yes, please, pass these out. I'm so sorry. Just got to leave me one. So the idea here is, everything is ready for the war. We're literally on the brink of war right now, and what a war. This is no cakewalk. This is a cataclysmic experience of our time. This is likely to lead to profound disruptions of energy supply, colossal disruptions of the monetary system. These are the sorts of disruptions that, like no other, reach down into the daily life of every person every day. How about a banking panic? How about a banking panic when you can't get your money out of the bank, and so on and so forth? The only thing that they require, Cheney's backers, I mean, the invisible government, is a suitable provocation, a suitable pretext. And this they have to manage themselves. They have to manufacture it. And they're going to use their intelligence networks to do that. A couple of typical things. A U.S. warship is blown up in the Gulf. Blown up most likely by a third country. Let's say Australia. Let's say Israel. It happened before. Or anybody else. New Zealand. Could be a wide range of ships. Sink an aircraft carrier for dramatic, demagogic, bombastic effect. At that point, you'd be able to politically begin the atomic bombing of Iran. Or, right now we have the German World Cup, the soccer tournaments that are spread all over Germany. It's like 30, 35 cities during the month of June. The stadiums can be protected, and generally are. But in addition to this, the soccer mania is so great that most cities have put up huge screens in their city centers so that people can have the collective experience of enjoying this game. So everything is ready for this except the provocation. And please, let's go beyond this. You have to think, what's the spin-off from this war. If you bomb the Iranian oil facilities, you will kill Chinese. This is where they work. You'll kill Chinese in large numbers. Remember the furor that followed the killing of a couple of Chinese diplomats in that embassy in Belgrade. That was done deliberately. That was the secret government. They wanted to do it. Chinese knew it. And tremendous demonstrations went on for weeks. This time it would be many Chinese. You'd also be killing Russians because the Russians are working in the nuclear plants of the country. You are therefore on a slippery slope. The U.S. is going to use Mujahideen ACALC terrorists as cannon fodder. They're going to use PKK terrorists, Kurdish Workers' Party, notorious. And then, of course, we have the BP Liberation Front. British Petroleum Liberation Front. This is the Ahvaz or Khuzestan area, the coast area that has the Abadan refinery, the Kargarland terminal, and pretty much the whole petroleum infrastructure. So this is bad news. Essentially, it means the unraveling of the world as you've known it. There's a certain reticence even in the ruling class to see this, because any of them who are not completely off the end of the pool understand that it destroys, it brings down their system, even as they claim to be shoring it up. Now, naturally, the argument that is presented here is that this has very little to do with the production of a nuclear device. One nuclear device, 6 months. I think the television said yesterday that now the great American spook community says sometime at the end of this decade or the beginning of the next decade. For one nuclear device. Device can mean something you need a dump truck for, or a railway car. That's a device. You can't shoot it, you can't launch it, you can't drop it, can't use it.
All except a couple of months.
Weight of what?
Oh, yes, this is Olmert, of course. That was in Olmert's inflammatory speech. And I don't even, it doesn't even matter one way. They could have a bomb tomorrow. Here we'd have one Iranian bomb compared to 500 Israeli bombs, 200 Pakistani bombs, plus the U.S., French, British bombs, the Indian bombs. Why Iran?
Bombs. Yeah.
North Korean bombs, even out of theater.
South African bombs.
It makes no sense. There's even, probably Swiss bombs. Not talked about.
In fact, the Japanese now, but they got a bunch of secret bombs, and they got missiles to deliver them.
Anybody
secretly making nukes for a decade.
Anybody who doesn't have them is seriously amiss in the world that we live in, just because you can see what goes on. So the point, therefore, is the real cause is the death agony of the dollar. Now, this, I think, people have got to ponder very, very carefully. The death agony of the dollar means the fall of the U.S. dollar as the only reserve currency in the world. When you think of world power, the world architecture, world social relations, the nature of the monetary system is the biggest single issue that there is. The British dominated the world from 1815 to 1931 with a pound sterling system, London Bill of Exchange, London gold market, and London was the staple of the world. In other words, all raw materials went there. Notice that the death agony of the pound extended from the First World War through especially 1931 is the big date to have in mind. 1931, which was the thing that turned the depression of those years from a mere collapse into a total disintegration. In other words, the total disintegration of the only world monetary system the world had. So therefore, a depression and a world war. So right now, just by crude analogy, we are faced by the danger of a depression and a world war. Now, how does this come about? Through seed crystals, you might say. There are two. People know these. The Iran oil bourse, which is a decision of the Iranian government and the oil ministry, would allow buyers and sellers from all over the world to purchase oil products, benzene, kerosene, the rest of this stuff, and perhaps also natural gas, we'll have to see that, for euros. This would be, by and large, the first time since 1944 that this could be done.
Why do you think they really canceled
it for now? Well, there are reasons galore. One of the reasons is if you hold dollars, you lose money. If you hold dollars, you're vulnerable to U.S.-British economic warfare, sanctions, and so forth. The other thing is, of course, a political gesture. Stick it in their eye. Mahathir Mohamad of Malaysia is one of the most intelligent thinkers in this regard. And his line has always been, if you're really angry, why waste your time with suicide bombers and pinpricks that don't amount to anything? If you really want to hurt imperialism, hit them in the monetary system, hit them in the weakness of the dollar, and you will be doing something strategic. And indeed, I would argue that is what Iran is doing. Now, when you have the ability to buy oil using euros, you have these central banks. They have $2.5 trillion equivalent of central bank reserves. Suppose they decide, well, probably $500 million ought to move into the euro. This could begin the long dreaded avalanche. You know these stories about the pile of sugar or sand and then one last grain. There are even some scientists who have made a momentary fame with this stuff. There's one guy with a Danish name that Al Gore thinks is great about dropping the last particle and then it all comes down. In the real world, it might be this. In Kuala Lumpur, one morning, a MBA, young kid, 25-year-old kid, gets up and he looks at the accounting before the boss comes in and says, hey, we're heavy on dollars. We might lose some money on those dollars today. That's usually what happens. Let's dump them. So $5 billion are dumped in Kuala Lumpur, and that goes to Singapore, and it goes to Tokyo, it goes to Beijing, and before too long, a psychosis has developed that Malaysia has decided to break out of the dollar system. At that point, the stampede for the exit is on. Dollar hyperinflation is on, courtesy of helicopter Ben Bernanke. Right? You know about hyperinflation? A couple of examples of hyperinflation. Hyperinflation is you go to a restaurant, you order the food, you get the bill at the beginning and pay it right away. Because if you wait 3 hours, the price will triple. The other thing is when you go to the supermarket, You got to wear the football equipment, because you cannot wait at the end of a checkout line, because if you wait 5 minutes in the checkout line, your bill will double. And on and on and on.
Right? That's what happened in Germany.
Because these are precisely examples from Germany and Hungary. Germany went a trillion to one. Hungary went in the quintillions to one. The Hungarian pango is an even more extreme example. But the story of the Hungarian pango is too inflammatory for a group like this. We'll have to save that for a more advanced advanced treatment.
Zimbabwe right now. Zimbabwe.
Anyway, the idea, you can see it. If significant amounts of these central bank reserves leave the dollar, then you get the implosion of the dollar. And it's catastrophic. And what can you do about this? Notice also that the State Department is now calling General Chavez of Venezuela a terrorist because he refuses to cooperate with them on their idiotic points. But the issue there is that he is also trying to barter his way out of the dollar, diversify his way out of the dollar. And all of this converges really on some kind of system, which might be jury-rigged at the beginning, where you'd have the dollar, you'd have the euro, you'd have the yen, you'd have the ruble. That's the next one. Putin, as per his State of the Russian Federation speech, has announced that the Russian trading system, RTS, will be operational next week on the 8th of June. The 8th of June, you can go to Moscow and buy Russian oil, Russian kerosene, and the rest of the derivatives for rubles. If they should also add to that, that the natural gas sold by Russia to the European Union, if that goes into rubles, then the dollar has been cut out of a huge and lucrative trade where, of course, the presence of the dollar was absolutely unbelievable, right? Superfluous, an intrusion, right? Absolutely making no sense except to help the dollar. Russia is actually more important. Russia is 16% of oil exports, Iran about 6%. Those two things together, we can take them with the fact that Norway, where they have North Sea oil, would like to have a euro-denominated oil market, and some similar things along the line from other countries, indicates that the rush for the exits is on, and that this has more or less determined the tremendous Wall Street vulnerability and turbulence of the past couple of weeks. So the result of that on the ruling elite is it propels them into war. In other words, this is the classical war psychosis, war as flight forward out of an untenable, impossible situation. And that is therefore the danger that we face. Now, the appeal that I would make is if you look at all this, you might say, well, gee, what can we do to stop these drills from turning into provocations? How can we stop this huge military machine? And the answer that I would give is 9/11 truth is not simply an issue next to other issues. It is an overarching issue that really determines all of them. And any progress that you would like to make in any field, be it child nutrition or education or building up a library budget in your town, solving the immigration question. All of this is rendered absolutely impossible by this insane mantra of the war on terror, the war on terror, the notion that the fictitious war on terror is somehow the purpose of this society, because that is that's the goal that they have. And that is obviously wrong. Bush has 35% support still. And you may marvel at that, but he does have it. Those people, I say, are terrified, scared out of their wits. They have bought into the demagogy of terror. They believe the story that there really is bin Laden and Al-Qaeda out there that would like to attack us and kill us. And then they will say, you can go to them and say, atrocities, torture, Abu Ghraib, NSA, and the whole list. And they will say, those are unfortunate necessities imposed on us by the logic of war. And if you don't, at that point, get to 9/11, you lose. In other words, what they need to hear is the attacks did not come from bin Laden and the cave and the Islamic fundamentalists. But they came from the caves, yes, from the bowels of the CIA, the DIA, the NSA, the NSC, the Department of Defense, the private military firms, and so on down the line. Yeah. That's where we find them. Okay. So, I have a special paragraph here that points out, and I think this is an important point. The movement is divided into theoretical schools. We have the Kane-Hamilton-Zelikow report. I don't think we have anybody for them. We have the Kane-Hamilton-Zelikow report with unanswered questions, and I'm sure we have some for them. We have the Kane-Hamilton-Zelikow report with incompetence and negligence. And then, the most, what can we say, mealy-mouthed of all, in my view, LIHOP, let it happen on purpose. And here is what I would say. All of those are in practice the same thing. They're all identical. They come down to exactly the same world and the same mental map of the world. Because what all of them agree is, there really is, out there in the world, a terrorist, destructive force with tremendous capabilities that wants to strike, wants to attack, and has shown that it can if the guard is dropped. And this exactly is what I propose to refute, as it's wrong. Bin Laden is a basket case. We just had Mousawi. I observed him up close, rather, in Alexandria.
Mental patient.
Huh?
I just said mental patient.
Mental, yes, absolutely. And with his stun belt. His own lawyers say the man is a paranoid schizophrenic with delusional tendencies. He is a psychotic patsy, half double agent, half patsy, half fanatic, half useful idiot. He saves the government's case repeatedly by pleading guilty. When the government case is about to fall, he pleads guilty. The government case is going to fall again because of egregious prosecutorial misconduct. What does he do? Gets his neck further into the noose. What I could see happening is that he's still in touch with his terrorist controllers who are telling him what to do. And what they tell him is what he says. He comes out and says, Bush will pardon me, Bush will exchange me. So you've practically got to be condemned to death for this to happen. And then the capping experience, Richard Reed and Mousawi were going to commandeer a Boeing 747 and fly it into the White House. In other words, this trumps everything else that everybody else did. A bigger plane,
That'd be like two guys in this room pulling out box cutters and saying they're going to kill us. First thing we do is go pound their heads in. I mean, you know.
But you see, I think it's more comparable to, you know, if you see a skateboard you like, you know, and you try to get a hold of the skateboard, or if some guy's got a push cart going through Manhattan and you want to take it away from him. In other words, it's commandeering at a very low level, right? Or a baby carriage, something like this. These people are basket cases. They could not even survive in their daily lives.
It's like Marinus Vanderloo with the Reichstag.
But they're pathetic. Pathetic figures. They're poor unfortunates from any conceivable.
It'd be like if I just went out and grabbed some homeless person, said, I'll give you $50, and I got them to shoot their mouth off about, we'll go blow something up, and then I'm a cop. They do that all the time, and here's the big mastermind, and they shuffle the poor homeless guy up there, and it's just...
Now, one last thing. My chairman is telling me that I'm Schluss here. The problem also with the unanswered questions, the incompetence and negligence and the LIHOP. If you really believe all of that is perfectly coherent with voting for a Democratic congressman who's going to continue the war. My reading of most Democratic candidates, especially since they've recruited them among military strata, is that the line of the Democratic Congress will be, we will prove ourselves to the American people by continuing the war with more aggression and more success than the bungling Republicans have ever done it. And behind that, of course, sits Hillary Clinton, right, the presumptive candidate who is an unspeakable warmonger. I hope everybody can see this.
Right?
Study her statements. LIHOP is fine for Hillary. LIHOP is wonderful because she comes in and says, yes, there's a dangerous terrorist enemy. These people have bungled the defenses. I can wage war more effectively, I'll be more energetic, I can even extort European troops and European money, which Bush can never get his hands on. Therefore, vote for me. So my plan is, if you read here, right now I think we have about 5,000 activists. We really ought to be 5 million. We ought to expand by 1,000 over the next 4 to 5 months. If we had a 5 million person movement, with a periphery of 25 million listening to us from time to time, from day to day. This would allow a significant presence in the left wing of the Democratic Party, significant presence in the Green Party area, and selected areas in the Republican anti-establishment corridors. And so it would be a cross-party caucus. It would be something that cuts across these usual wedge issues and usual nonsense things. So to do them, I just have these points, right, that we want to push the impeachment of Bush with 9/11 crimes as the number one issue. Take back the corporate airwaves. Sometimes you can do it by being on the radio yourself, but anytime there's C-SPAN, anytime there's Ed Schultz on Air America, right, anytime they take calls, and they're bullies and they're thugs, of course, but if you want to win, you've got to go into the blood and sand of the arena, and you got to sit there for hours and lie, right, and remember who you are that day, right? And remember your cover story, but get on there to overwhelm this device to show that the tapake of the American people is not this girl on this Dutch island in the Caribbean or something, which I've never quite figured out. Support candidates. Look, we have a list of candidates to support. Carol Brulé, Bob Bowman, Craig Hill. There must be others. I want to call attention to my good friend Morgan Stack of Cork, Ireland. He's running for the Irish Parliament, the Dáil, as 9/11 Truth in the district of Cork South Central. So it's the second largest city in Ireland, and 9/11 Truth is on the scene. We must keep up the drill surveillance. When the terrorist attacks come, and I'll try to show this in my program tomorrow morning in a little bit of detail anyway. Since these things are so big, they have to use government resources. And the way they use government resources is to schedule them to converge with a legally sanctioned drill in which certain key aspects flip live or flip into a different geometry. And of course, we call on 9/11 deep truths. This is the call raised by Phil Berg some time ago. We need 9/11 deep throats to come forward. We need the Watergate tapes of the Watergate of the current era. We need whistleblowers and so forth. And the last one, which I think is interesting, if Bush and Cheney should try to impose martial law, we should pledge ourselves now to promote a general strike. Mm-hmm. An open-ended general strike of industry, economic activity, farms, schools, cultural activity, theaters, everything, to shut it down. There's a documented example in the 20th century. It's called the Kapp-Putsch in Berlin, where a bunch of neo-Nazis tried to have Hitler in 1920 rather than in 1933, and they were defeated by the Social Democrats and the trade unions, who simply went to a general strike in the face of which this coup dissolved. Now, unfortunately, we don't have a labor movement anywhere near as strong as that. But since everybody realizes that martial law is a definite possibility, just saying so gives you an idea of what you might do. There's a meaningful course of action that might make a difference in the face of this. And depending on mass psychology, might very well turn into a mass strike of huge proportions.
The Algerians did it too during French occupation.
Yes, if you want to read about it, Rosa Luxemburg has written about it, Trotsky has written about it. Obviously, each one of them brings the peculiarities of their school, but you do learn a lot, especially because the normal bourgeois history doesn't talk so much about mass strikes. Right? It tends to fear them and mistrust them and not want to say so. So you can see the groups that have co-signed this. I appeal. I hope everybody here has a copy. I hope at the next... Sorry? Yeah? Well, I would hope that you would get a copy of this, you know, borrow one, and let us use one of these things called strategy session. I hope you'll join us in calling for this to be debated, because this is a strategy. And I think it offers some points that I think have support in the group.